The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me, and on Sunday, we spent several minutes discussing a disappointing blue blood with a Hall of Fame coach. That was Kentucky, led by John Calipari. Today, we'll spend another few minutes on another disappointing blue blood with another Hall of Fame coach. This time, it's North Carolina and Roy Williams. The Tar Heels fell at NC State on Tuesday at 79-76. So they're now 5-3. The other losses are to Texas and Iowa. Best win over Stanford. Norlander, you and I both had North Carolina projected as the third best team in the ACC in the preseason. Are we still confident UNC is a top three team in the ACC?
No. Did I really have them third?
I looked. I double checked.
Oh, man. It's not ideal right now.
We both had it. We both had it. Virginia, Duke, North Carolina, in that order.
Well, I didn't have Carolina. So here's where I differed in the preseason with some of the projections, yours and others. I did not have Carolina ranked in the top 25 portion of my 1-357. I put Carolina in 28th, and I remember before like settling on an ultimate order, like my first initial like let me throw everything at the wall. I think I had Carolina like 36 or 37. And the reason was they were so poor last year. I mean, historically bad. It was one of the five or six worst seasons in school history statistically that I was just – I wasn't totally sold on them going from 14 and 19 a season ago to being – if you're a top three team in the ACC, you know, that's probably a four seed at worst. And I wasn't all in on them there. I thought, okay – maybe they can get along the lines of a 5 or 6 seed, and that was really what wound up with me booting them up a little bit. But at this point, you know, I watched the majority of that NC State game. I would argue it wasn't even a 3-point game. NC State, you know, truly beat them by 6 or 7 points. Now 5-3 losses. The losses all respectable. So it's an interesting situation with UNC here. Lost to Texas in a really, really good game in the Maui Championship, which was obviously in Asheville. Then they lose at Iowa, but it wasn't that competitive, 93-80, and now they take the road loss against NC State. The win against Kentucky in the CBS Sports Classic has almost no value. The win over Stanford is solid, but otherwise, Charleston, UNLV, North Carolina Central, there's not a lot there. Their next game is at Georgia Tech a week from when we're talking here on December 30th. So I think there is still the chance, and with all due respect, as always, to Leaky Black here, and he's actually, I think, you know, He's been good in spots, but they're not as good as they should be. I still really love the front line. I still think this can be one of the best front courts in America, but it should be noted, 14-19 team last season. Now it's 5-3, and I'm not going to guarantee you that this team is heading to the NCAA tournament. And in the preseason, it was almost just like UNC got by on its jersey name. I don't know. I was always a little hesitant there, and some of that has come to the surface here. This is clearly, clearly not a top 25 team right now.
You know, North Carolina, as you mentioned, they go 14-19 last season. And the reason that I had them in the preseason top 25 and one thought that they would have a really nice bounce back season is because they enrolled in elite recruiting class featuring 3 5-star freshmen. The way they're supposed to go from 14 and 19 to really good is the 3 5-star freshmen are great. And they're all fine, I guess, but none of them are playing like freshman of the year candidates. Like against NC State, Daron Sharp had 6 points in 14 minutes. Walker Kessler had 3 points in 12 minutes. Caleb Love had 11 points, 4 assists, 2 turnovers in 28 minutes. Like, if your five-star freshmen aren't going to perform like five-star freshmen consistently, well, then you're not going to go from bad to really good. You can go from bad to good, from bad to respectable, from bad to an NCAA tournament team, but you're not going to be elite unless your five-star freshmen perform at an elite level. They are not doing that right now. The other interesting thing, and we touched on Sunday, with Kentucky, it is always the same things. You look at the box scores, you watch the games, it's always the same things. They can't take care of the ball, bad point guard play, and they can't make a shot. With Carolina, it's the same thing, can't make a shot. Last night, 2 of 12 from three-point range against NC State, 16.7%. They had 2 potential game-tying three-point attempts in the final 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Predictably, they missed them both. RJ Davis missed the first, Caleb Love missed the second, and they are now shooting – like 25.6% from three-point range on the season. That ranks 304th nationally. And this was just wild to look at. I don't really have any context for how rare or unusual this is, but it seems rare and unusual. Their top two scorers are both shooting 0% from three-point range. Literally 0.0%. Their starting lineup last night was Armando Bacot, Garrison Brooks, Caleb Love, the homie Leaky Black, and RJ Davis. On the season, those players are shooting 0% from three. That's Bacot. Brooks is 0% from three. Caleb Love is 11.8% from three. Leaky Black, 18.2% from three. RJ Davis, 32.3% from three. So they have 40% of their starting lineup shooting 0% from three range. Nobody's shooting better than 32.3. And I, like you, really love that front court. But if you have no perimeter threat at all, it makes everything in the front court much more difficult than it otherwise would be. They've got a fundamental flaw there that I don't know is fixable. They can't shoot the ball.
The fact they can't shoot the ball is an issue, and overcoming that is going to be a real problem. I remember I mentioned this on the podcast once or twice last season. I remember someone at UNC telling me that if Cole Anthony wasn't going to be able to become like a 40% three-point shooter, they were going to have real issues shooting beyond the arc because they just didn't have the personnel for it. They did have issues. They were terrible last season. They ranked 306 in the country, and now they're bad right now. They actually ranked 305 as we talk this morning here. But one more piece of context here on what you're talking about. This isn't going to change because I think Carolina fans know this, but I don't know that this is something that gets talked about a lot with UNC, and part of it's because they're always good, but Roy Williams is one of the best coaches in college basketball history, but he has been able to, for the entirety of his career, have dominant teams, 31 seasons, win national championships, number one seed, number two seed, number three seed, but he has never embraced a three-point oriented offense, ever. It's never been part of, it's not what he runs. It never has been. Right now, Carolina takes 25% of its shots from beyond the arc. That's 323rd in the country. Last season was 334. The season before that, 253. Then 240, 306, 338, 350, 349, 236. Never even close to top 150 in three-point rate. It's just not what he does. Now, some of that is because he's a firm believer in having a true point guard distribute good, reliable bigs, and if that's the case, you're going to filter down low. You'll get, obviously, great, that Carolina break, good opportunities in transition, push, push, push. But it's just not what he's believed in, and it's not that he's, you know, completely stubborn and incapable of changing, but he's obviously in the winter of his career, and I don't see that changing this season. So it will be interesting to see if this puts a ceiling on UNC. And my last thought on this whole thing here is, we'll see how good UNC is. I think UNC is going to make the NCAA tournament. I think Duke is probably going to make the NCAA tournament. I don't think Kentucky will. This is a trivia time for our listeners if you want to look this up because I haven't researched it yet. It shouldn't take too long. If Carolina winds up just not quite being good enough, 14-19 last season, they don't get enough opportunities in the ACC and they're just on the outside looking in. And maybe Duke's there too. Although I will say, as I talk through this, if we had a situation where Carolina and Duke were both on the bubble fighting to get in, that would be a kind of a delightful plot twist. Honestly, we've never had that. I wonder when the last time Kentucky, Duke, and Carolina all did not make the NCAA tournament. I'm going to blindly guess. This is a blind guess. I'm going to say early 1950s. I think at least one of those three teams has made the tournament every year since 60. Maybe there's a year in the early 60s where that's not the case, but I don't know about that. So just keep an eye on that going forward. Got questions on UNC, major issues at Kentucky. We'll get to that in a second. And then Duke, obviously, you know, limited sample size. We'll see if it can rally and get itself together in 2021.
One thing you got to understand is just how difficult it was to make the NCAA tournament back then when Bill Henderson had Baylor rocking and rolling. It was tough. It's a different sport.
And that was coming off the two-year-old Tony Hinkle era. It used to be really, really tough. There's no doubt. And people, the thing is, and this annoys me, like the mainstream college basketball media doesn't acknowledge this. No one ever talks about it, but you bring up a good point.
Last night, last thing on this, North Carolina had 18 turnovers, just 15 assists against NC State. Every starter had at least two turnovers. Three of the five starters had three. They, a lot like Kentucky, cannot shoot it. They do not take care of it. And then Garrison Brooks, he was the preseason ACC player of the year. Right or wrong, he was the guy that got labeled that. He averaged 16.8 points, 8.5 rebounds per game last season. That is why he was the preseason ACC player of the year. Statistically speaking, he was the best returning player in the league. But this season, points down, rebounds down, field goal percentage down, basically everything down. He was just 5 of 14 from the field, 10.7 rebounds against NC State. So he has not been as good as they probably need him to be. And when you combine that with the five-star freshmen aren't performing at typical five-star freshman, you know, national freshman of the year candidate levels, well, that's how you lose three of your first eight games. Let's move on. Kansas cruised in the second half to a 79-65 victory over West Virginia late Tuesday. Jayhawks came in averaging just 21.4 three-point attempts per game. They launched 37 against West Virginia, made 16 of them. We're going to talk about that next. First, check this out.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
So Kansas made 16 three-pointers and cruised to a 79-65 victory over West Virginia late Tuesday inside Allen Fieldhouse. They only entered the game averaging 21.4 three-point attempts per game, so 37 is a big number. When you make 16 of them, that's a good percentage. That's how you pull away in the final 20 minutes. Norlander, I know you watched the game, talked about it on CBS Sports HQ last night. What'd you think of KU's performance?
Message sent here. So a couple takeaways. First of all, it was obviously a real game and a damn interesting game at the half. KU trailed by one. Sean McNeil just makes a dominant showing. He wound up 6 of 10 from three-point range for West Virginia and really stepped up in a big way. And for a bit there, we wondered if West Virginia might be able to get arguably the best win anyone's had in college basketball this season. And then, you know, just completely different situation in the second half. Completely different. West Virginia only gets 29 points. So I've got Oscar Tshiebwe and Derek Culver combining for 11 points and 13 rebounds against Kansas. That's not going to be good enough. Kansas, the way it shot from three-point range was eye-opening. It's obviously, you know, a complete opposite from what we just talked about with Carolina there. And C.J. Moore, who does a great job covering Kansas and some other teams for The Athletic, noted this is actually the second highest three-point rate in a game ever under Bill Self at Kansas there. David McCormick played well. Christian Brown had 22 points. He made 6 three-pointers, had 7 dimes. Kansas's ability to really just overtake and overwhelm West Virginia on the glass is the kind of thing that we just don't see that often. Kind of a, you know, bittersweet day for Bob Huggins yesterday. He was nominated yet again as a finalist for the Naismith Hall of Fame. This is the fourth time. We'll see if he gets in. We will know the answer to that at the time of the Final Four. So he gets that good news, and then his team goes out and lays a second-half egg. My biggest takeaway, aside from, like, Kansas fans are going to be thrilled that they got that kind of performance out of McCormick. You didn't need a superhuman performance out of Jalen Wilson, although he was good again, and they had 5 guys in double figures. To me, it was more... We went into the season wondering, like, I almost felt like, at least I did, and I think you did to a certain extent, like, we gave Kansas the benefit of the doubt because of its coach about where it should be placed in the preseason rankings. If the personnel was the same but Kansas wasn't on the jersey, I think almost any other team would have been placed outside the AP top 10 preseason or the preseason polls. But now, open the season with the loss against Gonzaga, but what I said on HQ is this. Home win over Creighton, a tough one, but they got it. They win at Texas Tech. I'm pretty sure the Texas Tech win is like top 5 or 6 in terms of actual quality at this point. A great road win. And then they get this win. They're the third best team in college basketball. Now, I think you've got them 4. I think you still have them 4. But to me, it's Gonzaga clearly won. Baylor right there, you know, giving chase. I still think there's a little bit of separation there, but they're 2. And then Kansas is 3. And before the game last night, Parrish, I just wasn't convinced of that. Now I am, and Kansas gets a little bit of a break here. If KU fans are wondering, I did text Bill Self and asked if he was going to squeeze in one non-conference game before their January 2nd game against Texas because they have the room for one more. He said, no, we're not going to do that. So KU will not play again until a huge game on January 2 against Texas. But are you with me? Even though you don't have him 3rd, like, this is the, I think it's fair to say this is the 3rd best team in college basketball right now after what they've done.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, certainly. You know, I have it Gonzaga 1, Baylor 2, Iowa 3, Kansas 4. My rationalization for that, I explained on Sunday's podcast. Like, Iowa and Kansas are both one loss teams, the one loss both coming to top ranked Gonzaga. And I could have done it. Like, I could do whatever I want, but I didn't see the point in dropping Iowa from 3 down to 4 below Kansas when they both had the same loss and Kansas lost by more points to Gonzaga. Just 1 point. More,
you're right.
But still, yeah.
And Iowa won on Tuesday, by the way. You know, they were able to beat Purdue. So, you know, there's a case there. I would think I would just take Kansas on a neutral tomorrow.
I think it's those 4 teams because after that you get into Tennessee, which is ranked on reputation at this point. They really haven't done anything. I mean, they beat Colorado, but you know, their season was delayed because of COVID issues. I'm just looking at my top 25 and 1 now. Villanova's got the one sort of questionable loss to Virginia Tech. Then you got I got West Virginia at 7. You know, Virginia's got the San Francisco loss at 8. So the top 4 in some order should be the 4 that I have, and you could certainly have Kansas as high as number 3, and I think no lower than 4. The Jayhawks now have 4 top 50 KenPom wins. I don't know if it's going to stay that way. Kentucky is sitting at 50 and trending the wrong direction, but the other ones over Texas Tech, West Virginia, and Creighton off to a terrific start. And you're exactly right. When I put Kansas in the top 10 of the preseason top 25 and 1, when I looked at the roster, I was like, I don't know if this is a top 10 team, but it's Kansas, Bill Self. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But now, you know, it looks like we had them underrated in the preseason. They look like a legitimate national championship contender. As I said earlier today on CBS Sports HQ, way earlier today on CBS Sports HQ. Baylor should still be considered the favorite in the Big 12, but Kansas is obviously a real threat, not only to win that league, but to win the whole thing. You know, they would have entered the NCAA tournament last season as the number one overall seed, and they're looking like they're a candidate to be a one seed in the 2021 NCAA tournament as well. Just terrific stuff. And it is interesting that, you know, Kansas is a blue blood with a Hall of Fame coach, just like Kentucky, just like Duke, just like Carolina. But over and over again, you look at these Bill Self coach teams, and it's not like some top five recruit who is starring for them. You know, like Christian Brown last night, just a guy coming out of high school. You know, Jalen Wilson was just a guy coming out of high school. And Bill, I think more than any of the other active Hall of Fame coaches, is able to, sure, enroll a five-star prospect and benefit from them. Most famously, I think, you know, Andrew Wiggins, Joel Embiid, that class. But I guess I'd put it this way. More, you see a four-star guy or a three-star guy become a relevant, important piece at Kansas more often than you see that at Kentucky or Duke or Carolina. Do you think that's true?
On its surface, it sounds true, and obviously player development there is huge. I think that the poster players for this to kind of cement...
I mean, I'm talking about like guys like Frank Mason.
That's exactly what I'm about to say. Like Frank Mason and Devontae Graham, who was going to go to App State before he got out of that LOI. Those were the two that... But yes, I feel like that is the case, and what Self has done so far is impressive. There's no doubt about it. Now, you know, Jalen Wilson's way better than anyone thought. Christian Brown is certainly growing into a nice player. Like, they're doing this without even... Like, if you told me this was what Kansas was going to be, I would tell you that, okay, Bryce Thompson absolutely hit, and he's one of the three most important players, and he's hitting 38% of his threes. That's not been the case. Bryce Thompson, a heralded five-star recruit, has not been a big factor. Neither has, like, Mitch Lightfoot, you know? It's been Garrett. It's been Wilson, Ojai Agbaji. It's a good roster that's well-coached, and Self is getting the most out of it at this point. The Gonzaga loss is well behind him, and, you know, it's what, 10, 11 days out here? I can't wait for that Texas-Kansas game. That can be an absolutely awesome one on January 2nd. We got a ways to go, but, KU sitting pretty at 8-1 and establishing quite a nice resume for itself so far.
It wouldn't be an episode of the Eye on College Basketball podcast if we didn't at least touch on Kentucky a little bit. So... John Calipari, he did make headlines earlier this week when he announced that he's asked Cameron Fletcher to step away from the team after the four-star freshman was visibly upset in the closing minutes of UK's loss to North Carolina over the weekend. Here's what Cal tweeted. Quote, "We have asked Cameron Fletcher to take some time and step away from the team. He needs to reflect and do some soul searching to get his priorities in order. Any attitude or actions that are detrimental to this team will not be tolerated, and that goes for everyone on the team. We have a culture here that's been built over the last 11 years, and it will, all caps, will not change. Through good times and bad, this culture is meant to change individuals and change maturity levels. This hurts our team, but this is about Cam and his future. I talked to Cam and his mother, and they know I care about him and I love him, but they also understand that there are changes that need to be made. It's his job to decide whether he can perform within this culture, both on and off the court." End tweet. It was three separate tweets. That's a lot of words. Were you surprised that John Calipari was so publicly critical of a player while announcing what is a de facto suspension? Because I don't want to say he's never done this before, but I don't remember him ever doing something like this before.
Scale of 1 to 10, my level of surprise was probably about an 8.8. What about you with what he said when he said it?
Yeah, he usually would just say, you know, he usually just say, "Hey, we've asked Cam to step away from the team and, you know, to take a few days to do, you know, whatever." But like to talk about maturity levels and you know, you have to be a part of our culture. We're not changing for you. Conduct detriment of the team will not be tolerated. It was just a lot of words to say something that I think John is probably said or suggested in much fewer words. I want to be clear. I'm not critical of him for doing it. You can't have a player on the sideline breaking down because he's not playing in the final moments of an important nationally televised game. Like, you know, and we should also be clear. We don't know what happened after that game. You know, right. Keep in mind, it took a long time for John Calipari to meet with the media. No player that participated in the game with North Carolina, as we discussed on Sunday's podcast, was made available to the media. So what we saw was worthy enough, I think, to ask Cameron Fledger to step away from the team. I'd be interested to know what we didn't see, because I would assume it trickled into the locker room in some regard. And the byproduct of that is Cameron Fledger no longer being an active member of Kentucky's basketball program.
Yeah. I mean, and for, we're left to, you know, it's, you know, Cal making this statement is unusual. It just is, okay? He doesn't do this thing normally, and not to this extent. 1-5, Cameron Fletcher's a freshman. The fact that he does it, and he, like, he knows when he puts this stuff out. The Kentucky fan base is as committed, passionate, generally aware of, like, every player, the role they play, the shots they should and shouldn't take, when they should and shouldn't be in a game, like whether those opinions are right or wrong, they just know all the nooks and crannies about their team. So when Cal does this, it puts probably undue speculation and pressure on Fletcher. That's not to say that Fletcher could have done something that was wrong. He clearly must have for Cal to do this, but now it's left to a guessing game, and you leave so much room for speculation, which is probably not entirely fair to Cameron Fletcher. You're going to leave out the details. That's the right move. Ask him to take some time away from the team. I can't help but wonder, when you do that in a 1-5 start and you make references to his behavior public, does that even damage him coming back at all? Will we see Cameron Fletcher return to UK? If he will, when will that be? Will it be in mid-January? Will it be next season? I don't know. Fletcher must have done something, or it must have been a number of things, and I don't have information on this. I don't have anything to report on. I'm taking strictly what Cal has put out there, and in doing so, and frankly, queued up and teed up these kinds of conversations, which, again, aren't fair to Fletcher. But if he's going to say this, clearly he believes that Fletcher's behavior or actions, whether it was only after the game or during the game, or it was a series of events, have threatened the locker room or the nature of the season to the point where he felt he had to do it. I don't know. Like, that's a lot. Now, he could have just simply said, Cameron Fletcher has decided to take some time away from the team. We support him in this. We'll welcome him back. He could have said that. He did not say that, though, Parrish. And so because of that, because it's 1-5, you know, we don't need to spend more than a few minutes here on this podcast about it, but it is notable, and it's obviously going to inflames the situation around Kentucky leading up to, oh, by the way, the December 26th game this weekend against your most hated rival. Like, it was, I just found it interesting, and I was surprised Cal went as far as he did without sparing more details, which was, again, the right move. But, yeesh, I mean, it's just, it is a bad, bad situation at Kentucky. And if a loss against Louisville is coming up next, then, I mean, that's probably just about rock bottom.
You know, again, we don't know what happened off of national television, but, like, some of this did happen on national television. It was a story well before John Calipari started tweeting about it on Monday. So, you know, it is what it is. But I do think you make an important distinction in the way that this was phrased. Under normal circumstances, I think John, to the extent he would have said anything, would have said, Cameron Fletcher has decided to step away from the team. Instead, the tweet starts with, we have asked Cam Fletcher to take some time and step away from the team. In other words, making it very clear from the jump, this is not his decision. This is our decision. We're telling him to separate for a little while, perhaps even forever. I don't think John would have phrased it that way, because he has typically, throughout his career, been a protect the player type of person. And on this one, it was, we asked him to get away from this program. That type of behavior, attitude, actions will not be tolerated. It's detrimental to the team. This was different. Unprecedented, I'm not sure, but certainly different. As for Cameron Fletcher, and by the way, Cam Fletcher did jump on Twitter and apologize to Big Blue Nation, said he'd never do it again, and so on and so forth. We'll see. But what did he expect when he enrolled at Kentucky? Kentucky, per usual, enrolled the number one recruiting class in America, had six prospects in it. Five of the prospects were in the top 40 in the high school class. And then there's Cameron Fletcher, who was ranked 68th. So he's the lowest rated prospect in a six-player class that doesn't even include Olivier Saar and Jacob Toppin.
And Davion Mintz.
Yeah, yeah, okay, right. And now you're mad you're not playing? Like, why did you think you were going to play? Now, I will say that first three games of the season, he was 17 minutes, 15 minutes, 13 minutes, and then it went 1 minute, 4 minutes, 2 minutes. So it dropped off considerably. But, hey, if there's any four-star recruits listening right now, let me give you a tip. If you go to Kentucky, you're probably not playing. Like, when's the last? How often do four-star recruits become meaningful players at Kentucky under John Calipari?
It's not often. And in fact, I credit Cal for this in that his messaging has always been consistent. Now, he's been able to win enough that the messaging is this way, but he basically says, if you want to come to Kentucky, like, you need to embrace the challenge, understand that nothing is promised to you, and we got a bunch of dudes going to the NBA here, so you got to be able to handle this. And he knows that when he recruits certain players, they won't be able to handle it. And for the most part, I think he's done a pretty good job at managing that. Again, he's just finding himself in this brutal year where just nothing's going right. Not right combination of players. The pandemic is obviously worsening things. I think it's worth at least pointing out that, again, just to repeat my point from Sunday's podcast, this is not easy on players anywhere and coaches and all of us in the middle of all of this crap. But you're right. Cam Fletcher, not the number six rated player in his class. He was, sometimes these players, any coach will tell you this. It can be at Kentucky. It can be at Eastern Kentucky. The outsized expectations of so many of these guys when they get to college versus what they were at their high school, on their grassroots team, the adjustment for them and sometimes their parents or their guardians, it is a part-time job for some of these head coaches and assistant coaches to manage expectations for playing time for their players. Again, this is at Kentucky just as it is at Eastern Kentucky and anywhere else. And we just happen to see it boiling over in public view with Fletcher, over the weekend there and with what Cal's saying here. So keep an eye on it. He's not Brandon Boston doing this. It's not Terrence Clark. Cameron Fletcher, most college basketball fans didn't even know who Cameron Fletcher was until he did this. But it is yet another piece of evidence that this season has completely gotten out of Calipari's control, and we'll see how it can be mended, if it can be mended at all, with the game on Saturday against Louisville.
I've always thought it's interesting because, we're talking about Cam Fletcher like he's a bum. He's not. He was ranked 68th in the country in his high school class. Like, imagine being one of the top 70 anythings in the entire country, in your age group. So, it's amazing. But relative to Kentucky standards, he's just a guy and was literally the lowest rated guy. So, I'll just circle back to my initial point. If you're ranked 68th in the country, you should not expect to go to Kentucky and play. So, I would question your decision to even commit to Kentucky in the first place. If you told me, Kentucky offered, I say, okay, cool, that's great. So, what are you thinking? Yeah, I just can't pass up the opportunity to go there. And I know I'm probably not going to play, but as a freshman, because they're bringing in five guys all higher rated than I am, plus they've got three transfers they're enrolling. They're bringing back one player, but I just want to be at Kentucky. I want to be a part of that program. And then hopefully in time, I'll develop into a meaningful piece. I'd say, okay, sounds like you got the right mindset. But if you told me I'm going to Kentucky as the 68th ranked player in my high school class, and if I only play 2 minutes in the sixth game of the season, I'm going to have a meltdown on the sideline. I'd be like, yo, you don't need to go there. Then you need to go to Northern Kentucky, not the University of Kentucky. So I'm not sure what his expectations were, but I have always found it fascinating to think about if you're a Kentucky level prospect and then you end up You know, if you're somebody who's good enough at basketball to be offered a scholarship at Kentucky, you have almost certainly always been the best player on any team you've ever been on. Certainly one of the best players on any team you've ever been on, and you've never sat on the bench your entire life. What must that be like to sit on the bench for the first time in your entire life? It's got to be a weird thing. I remember, I'm not comparing myself to a Kentucky basketball player, but I was like an okay baseball player growing up. You know, I played, 6 years old, made the all-star team. 7 years old, made the all-star team. 8 years old, like I was always
all right, playing. Guy. Okay.
I was really good. I could really play middle infield.
The older you get, the better you were. I know. Keep it going.
I'm being sincere. I was a pretty good middle infielder. Couldn't really hit that well. But I always started for every team I was ever on, and I was always like one of the better players on the team. And then I got to high school in my freshman season. I made varsity, but I didn't play. You know, because we had a junior second baseman and a senior shortstop, and I just didn't play. And I was miserable. I hated it. I wanted the season to be over. We were actually in the state playoffs, and I wanted us to lose. I was tired of sitting on the bench. I didn't want to sit on the bench another game. And again, it's apples to oranges. I was just a mediocre high school baseball player. But the point remains the same. I had never sat on the bench in any sport that I'd ever played, because I only played things that I was good enough to play. And I played soccer and baseball. You know, I tried to play basketball 1 year. I wasn't good enough. I just said, I don't want to do this anymore. But I had never sat on the bench, and it was, I don't want to say depressing, but it sucked. And so I can understand how it might be a weird thing to go through when you're somebody like Cameron Fletcher and suddenly you're sitting on the bench for what I assume is the first time in your entire life. But like, what did you expect when you enrolled at Kentucky? Like, there is a whole bunch of programs, the overwhelming majority of programs in America, where if you're ranked 70th in the country, you can go there and reasonably expect to be a rotation piece as a freshman. But Kentucky is not one of those places. So if you are in a situation where you want to play big minutes as a freshman or else you're going to have a meltdown, if you're ranked 68th in the country, you should not be going to Kentucky. And that goes for Cam Fletcher or anybody who's ranked 68th in the class of 2021, 2022, 2023, until John Calipari is no longer the coach. Before we get out of here, tremendous news out of Florida on Tuesday. Keontae Johnson was released from the hospital. Now, the Gainesville Sun had a report citing sources about what might have caused Keontae's collapse at Florida State. You can read that if you want, but it should be noted that Florida officials haven't released anything in that regard so far. Keontae's family hasn't either. So we're going to hold off on diving into the specifics. Keontae's parents have promised to share any information they believe could help others, but they insist that process has not been completed yet. So, like I said, we'll wait to have that conversation another day. But for now, it's just nice to know Keontae Johnson is at home.
Agreed. And that's a good note on that report. Particularly because it came out a few hours after the family released a statement on Tuesday saying that Keontae was going to be discharged from the hospital, which is obviously wonderful news, and the family is going to be as transparent as possible with everything, which is also wonderful news because obviously we're in the midst of a public health crisis, and Keontae's condition and his incident are as important to him as they do inform college basketball, as they inform college hockey and college football and pro basketball. Frankly, what happened to Keontae Johnson should be a concern. I've seen some people kind of narrow it down to an issue with college basketball. No, it's actually an issue for all of sports, and in particular, all college sports. Because if it could happen to Keontae Johnson, it could just as well happen to someone playing college sports in March or college hockey right now. So just keep that in mind. But the news that he has left the hospital has been wonderful. There was a video posted over the weekend of him dancing with his teammates, which was honestly wonderful. Seeing Keontae kind of try and cut a rug there was great stuff. So the best to him, at this point, the fact that his family can, think about where we were, 11 days ago or so, and the situation his family was in, his parents were in, and how scary that was, the answers that weren't known at that point, and now they're going to get to spend Christmas with their son. This is absolutely wonderful, and again, it's been great to see Florida and the family continue to provide updates as they've been able to and been comfortable with, and they've been fairly consistent. I mean, we've had, I want to say, 5 or 6 updates from Florida with consistency. So that's wonderful and great for Keontae. The fact that he's going to get to spend this holiday with his family, be out of the hospital, that is absolutely wonderful. Because the one thing you don't want to be is in the hospital on Christmas. That's actually where I was a year ago. Not nearly as bad, but I had the herniated disc, which was causing the leg issue, and then I got diverticulitis on Christmas Eve, and got stuck in the hospital for 48 hours. So that was a that sucks. And there's going to be a lot of families that obviously are dealing with a lot this holiday season. So for Keontae, that's certainly wonderful news. And as a reminder, Florida is not playing any of its non-conference games for the remainder. It has pushed all that off. And now, as it kind of tries to prepare, its next game is scheduled for a week from today on December 30th, when it will open the SEC season at Vanderbilt.
You mentioned the Florida updates. They've done a tremendous job of you know, being respectful of Keontae's privacy, but also letting, people know, how he was doing and that he was getting better because, this isn't, and this would be a story regardless of who the player was, but this wasn't just like some random player at random school. This was the preseason SEC player of the year, a projected first round NBA draft pick who collapsed on national television in a game against an in-state rival. So this was a big story, and then because of the speculation about what might have caused it, it became an even bigger story. And every time we've gotten an update, it's made me smile because it's just been one good thing after another. And you and I both know people at Florida on that staff in that athletic department. And, when this happens, I don't want to speak for you, but from my perspective, you reach out to people just to let them know, hey, thinking of you, hope everything goes well. You try to be respectful of the privacy, but you're also curious, how are things going? Not even from a, because I want to tweet something real quick, but I'm just genuinely curious, like how are things going? How you feeling? Are you optimistic? And again, I don't want to speak for you, but the stuff we were hearing early on was not good. At least the stuff I was hearing early on was not good. And to go from that to, hey, Keontae's FaceTiming with his team. Whoa. Hey, Keontae is releasing a video where he's thanking fans for thoughts and prayers. Wow. Hey, here's Keontae dancing with his teammates. Awesome. Hey, Keontae's going to be home for Christmas. It's just been one good positive thing after another. And given what we all watched when we saw the video of him collapsing, and then the things we were hearing early on, I can't tell you that I expected it to go this well. I can just tell you I'm thrilled that it has gone this well.
I agree with you. We can make this a little shorter podcast here, but before we get out of here, just a reminder that we will have another episode for you. GP can't hear it now because I'm going to put it in post, but yes, I got a little Christmas music on this episode and next. I always like to get a little bit festive here. We will have a Christmas Eve episode for you. That's because Wednesday has no shortage of good games. Illinois is going to play at Penn State, Rutgers, Ohio State, Nova, Marquette, UCLA, Oregon, Xavier, Creighton, Providence at Butler. Butler, by the way, lost the longest non-conference home win streak in America. It was Duke's a year ago. It lost to Stephen F. Austin, then Southern Illinois. Shouts to the Salukis. Got to shout the Salukis out. They were able to get a win at Butler earlier this week, and Butler's going to turn around in 2 days and try and defeat Providence here. But before we get out of here, it is technically, I can't wait for tomorrow's episode. It's Festivus today, December 23rd. And Festivus is the airing of grievances. I gave Parrish no heads up on this. Do you have any grievance? I'm talking anything. I know you do. So any grievance in the world that you need to air out, I want to provide you the forum right now, Parrish. It's December 23rd. You have a grievance. If you got two, lay them on me. What? Give the people a grievance here on Festivus.
I'm frustrated with folks trying to spell cancel with two L's.
Okay. Well, we already talked about that one recently. That is an issue. You know, here's a grievance of mine. I saw this tweet earlier this morning. It's Christmas card season. Here's a grievance. No, a grammar grievance. If you send me a Christmas card, which you didn't, by the way, but whatever, it's fine.
We didn't do one this year.
Neither did
we. My wife actually mentioned it last night. She says, I'm a I'm sort of sad we didn't do a Christmas card this year. And I said, I'm sort of sad our entire living room is covered in Legos.
There's a grievance.
I get so frustrated at my kids just making messes nonstop. We are about to turn attic space over our garage. We are going to get it built, whatever you call it. It's going to be a new playroom. And it is upstairs, the furthest, it will be as far away from the rest of the home as you possibly can get. And I have promised my kids I will build them the most incredible playroom, but they are not allowed to bring any toys ever under any circumstances downstairs ever again. Like that's how much I am bothered by just stuff laying everywhere that I am going to spend a not insignificant amount of money to make it when I walk in my door, I don't have to look at 40 superheroes in my dining room.
Okay. I agree with you on this, and that's a good grievance. So, two things. Christmas card right there with you. First of all, we didn't expect to get too many from friends this year because we just thought, like, everyone was in the situation we're in. Like, it's the pandemic. We're exhausted all the time. Like, we didn't have time to do it. The mail is slow, so whatever. And then, like, we've had friends send us some really good ones, and we're like, we dropped the ball there. So my apologies. My grievance, if you were to send me a Christmas card and it came from the parishes, it would be the parishes, plural.
Oh, yeah,
not possessive. No apostrophe. So it would be P-A-R-R-I-S-H-E-S.
That's correct.
Not apostrophe S. My grievance is with the people in this world who are adults who don't understand. I will go grammar grievance again every damn podcast. It is not possessive. There is no apostrophe in your name when you send something from your family. It's plural, damn it. It's plural.
This actually drives me crazy as well. Like, Merry Christmas from the Smiths, apostrophe S.
No.
It's not an apostrophe. Get it at, like we used to have, I don't know if they're yard ornaments or whatever, but it would be like, it would say the parishes on it. And my wife got one time that had apostrophe S. And I said, I cannot put that in our yard. It's incorrect. Like, she's like, well, but that's, she tried to, well, that's the way everybody else does it. I said, well, everybody else is dumb. We're not going to be dumb with everybody else.
Correct.
We're not going to be dumb with the rest of the world. No apostrophe on parishes, no apostrophe on Smiths. But what percentage of Christmas cards do you think are incorrectly written with an apostrophe?
I mean, I think as a country, I think we're clipping at like 75%, and it's brutal. It's brutal. I don't know how this happens, but it's incorrect, and it needs to stop, and it's going to, the stopping starts right here.
Yeah, in terms of other grammar things, this is one I've talked about before. It drives me crazy forever. When people say, you'll see it on TV all the time. You'll hear it on podcasts all the time. I could care less. It's could not care less. It's not, if you could care less, that means you could actually care less than you already do. It's I could not care less than I already care. It is actually impossible for me to care less than I do, because I could not care less. It is remarkable how many people get that wrong over and over and over again.
You know what else is creeping up now these days? Would of. Not would of, apostrophe V-E, as in the conjunction for would have, but it's would O-F. Oh, I would have done that. No!
Nobody actually types that out, do they?
Oh, it happens. Oh,
what?
It happens. Oh, yeah. Yeah, or should of, OF. Oh, yeah, that's out there. Oh, yeah.
I can understand somebody's verbalizing that.
Oh,
But typing would OF.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Really?
This is a thing. I'm going to do a Twitter search right now. I'm typing in the phrase right now. Let's see today how many people have done it. Well, this is not exactly the best kind of search because it brings up any tweet that has both should and of in it. But it does happen. People listening know. By the way, when we did our grammar grievances previously, good feedback. I appreciate that. We've got some people in our corner, which I very much appreciate. But it is Festivus. And hope everyone is having a wonderful Christmas Eve. And we will be back for another episode tomorrow to talk about whatever happens tonight. And then obviously we will preview what's a pretty solid Saturday in college hoops.
One more before we leave, because you just used the word literally and you used it correctly. But when people say things like, my head literally exploded. No, your head did not literally explode. Like, we have reached a point where people, A, overuse the word literally, but B, use it incorrectly over and over again, but every day.
But the problem is that this was like 3-4 years ago. Yeah, this is literally a link I'm clicking on right now. Merriam-Webster has a post dedicated to this. Did we change the definition of literally? And it says, is it okay to ever use literally to mean figuratively? And Merriam-Webster, citing Charles Dickens, because this has become so widespread. Now, I'm with you. Again, I'm not going to do it. But so many people used literally incorrectly that it became accepted, according to Merriam-Webster. Maybe it was Merriam, maybe it was Webster. I don't know which of the two. I got issues with both of you for this. But I'm with you on that.
It's ridiculous.
Like, It's not literally ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
The idea that we would change the meaning of a word because people were misusing it instead of teaching people how to not misuse it makes no sense to me. Like, what if everybody was calling the sun the moon? Would we just be like, all right, fine, we'll just call the sun the moon then? It makes no sense. How about let's do it right?
It's anarchy. I know. I hear you, man. We'll continue to try and better this fractured nation, one podcast.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Lar now. And thank you guys for listening once again to the Ion College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Literally the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Actually, I don't think that's right, because I don't think a pandemic can literally be dumb. But you get the point.
Yes.
Merriam-Webster said it's okay. I can use it like that. If you're not subscribed already, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. While you're there, rate it. Leave a review. 5 stars, nice comments. And by the way, when I asked people last podcast to please go do that, the people came through. We got tons of new ratings and tons of new reviews, positive stuff. So sincerely, I appreciate that. Norlanda does too. Keep it up, and we will talk to you again tomorrow morning. Till then, take care.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast, and I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.